Now, this world of the Indus flourished for about 1,000 years, from about 2,500 to 1,500 B.C. And then there came invading these warrior people from the north, the Aryans. These were nomadic, hunting, and fighting people. The period, 1,500 or so, is just about the same as that of the Semites invading Canaan, the Hebrews, in fact. And the attitude is just the same. It is that of warrior people who take. The earlier people had been planting and trading people. Their principal divinity was the great goddess, the mother who brought forth and supported all life. The great deity is the divine goddess here who is served by sun and moon. Whereas the deity of these invading people was a male god flinging thunderbolts. And you remember reading in, I think it was Deuteronomy, fields that you did not plant, you shall reap. Houses you did not build, you shall inhabit. The invading people come in and take. And so we have the establishment of a two-class system, the so-called Aryan or noble aristocracy and the peasant beneath. Now, this starts a whole tension in the Indian world that is quite new. It is exactly contemporary with the Dorian Greeks coming into Crete and overcoming that world there. Then there is a long period of interaction between these two worlds. Now, I want to speak very briefly about the Vedic tradition, which starts out very much like the Homeric, but as I said, it becomes absorbed by the tradition already there. When you are a set of people, you can worship or revere the divinity of this stone, this tree, this pond. When you are a nomadic people, you revere what is everywhere. The great sky and its light, the blowing clouds and the winds, the broad earth, or the fire of your altar of sacrifice. The Brahmins, who were the magicians or priests of these warriors, like Calchas in the Iliad, would build their altars anywhere. They would be symbolically constructed so as to imitate the form of the cosmos. And then pouring sacrifices into the flames, the flame being a god, namely Agni, who was the mouth of the deities, would consume the sacrifice and give it to the gods. They would invoke the deities to participate in the sacrifice. That's the first stage. That's the stage of the Vedas, the sacred texts, the prayers that were heard, so to say, from the song of the universe. Next comes this wonderful thought. And now we move into India. The Greeks never had this one. Since through our sacrifice we can influence the gods, we and our sacrifice are stronger than the gods. There are two kinds of gods. There are the gods and there are the Brahmins. And if you ask which is the stronger, the answer is the Brahmins. That put the Brahmin on the top of the universe. That put the human being on the top of the universe. There is not a power in the world greater than a fulfilled, noble human being. This is what thrilled our philosophers of the 19th century when they read it. Next, since the sacrifice is the secret of the universe, what is the nature of the sacrifice? The nature of the sacrifice is that a sacrificial offering is poured into a fire. That sacrificial offering is a symbol of God, is a god. It's called Soma, who is a god. The fire also is a god. And now we come to this Dionysian realization. The whole universe is an ever-burning sacrifice, unquenchable, inexhaustible, going on and on. And then there come the two attitudes of the East. One, either say yes to it or say no to it. If you're going to say yes, you affirm the world as it is. This concept that came into our biblical tradition from Persia of an original good creation, then a fall, and then a gradual restoration does not exist here. You've got to take it or leave it. And if you're going to take it, the ways of nature cannot be evil. You are in no position to condemn anybody or anything for living in the way of nature. And the way of nature is life eats life. It is an ever-burning fire. Now, if you don't like it, the answer is to pull out. And we have then emerging, immediately after this, the traditions of pulling out. Buddhism, Jainism, how to get out. These are of two orders, one very strict, one intending death. That is to say, not even to live, because every move you make is a danger to some little thing, if not some big thing. Life, as Schopenhauer said, is something that should not have been. And if you take that seriously, out you go. It's not so easy to get out, because if you get out in resentment, you'll be back doing nasty things to people. So what you have to do is quench your desire and fear and just go out like a light. And that's what the word nirvana means, blown out. You've just gone out like a light, sputter, sputter, out. Now, how do we get there? This is called in Japanese, jiriki, self-power. Japanese word for automobile is jidosha, self-moving machine. Jiriki, self-power. The Japanese word for the way of the kitten is tariki, or outside help. Now, Zen is the way of inside help, do it yourself. And in the great mythic world of the bodhisattvas and the buddhas, whose grace and mercy and compassion yields the energy that enables us to release ourselves from our bonds of illusion, you have the way of outside power. This is the way of myth. A mythic image is an outside power that has come to help you. And through it, you can achieve the release. We have the various deities who represent the inferior powers, but we also have ultimate deities which represent the ultimate power of ideation of the mind. And these are represented in the Buddha figures, in the Bodhisattva figures, and in Hinduism, which follows this Buddhist tradition as a restoration of the old Brahminical tradition with the addition of yoga. In Hinduism, you have the great gods Vishnu, Shiva, and Kali. Let me just conclude by speaking about these three gods very briefly. Vishnu is represented typically as the Lord who sleeps, the God who does not know what he's doing. And the world is his dream. The world comes forth as his dream and is taken back to him. And this is represented in the image of a lotus growing from his navel on which the world rides. That God is the energy, the will, that sends forth the dream of the world. Shiva is represented as the Lord who dances the world. And that wonderful dancing Shiva image, he is shown with a little drum in his right hand. And that tick, tick, tick of the drum is the beat of time, which throws a veil of time across the face of eternity. Eternity is not time. Eternity transcends time, but we can think of it only in terms of time. Then his left hand holds a flame, and this is the flame of illumination that burns away the veil and opens to us the eternal dimension again. His second right hand is in the don't be afraid posture, Abhaya Mudra, do not be afraid. And his other left hand is in what's called the elephant or teaching posture, pointing to his lifted left foot. Now, this lifted left foot represents release. The right foot is down on the back of a little dwarf whose name is ignorance. The right foot is driving souls into birth in ignorance. The left foot is releasing them. The right hand is the tick of time that brings about the whole show. The left hand is the illuminating flower, a fire that will illuminate us with respect to it all. This hand says, don't be afraid, nothing's really happening. It's all a show. And this hand is the hand of teaching. The head is the silent midpoint. The midpoint, the right earring is a man's earring, the left a woman's earring, the pairs of opposites of the sexes and of positive, negative, and everything else come forth from this center. And in the hair is a skull representing death, a crescent moon representing the power of rebirth, a datura plant, which is the hallucinatory plant, bringing about the illusion of the world. And a little female figure whose name is Ganga, the river Ganges, which brings the grace of God from his hair to us all. And he's encircled by a great aureole of flame and fire. And when you look at those three, those hands, the three of them out here, and this other one out here, and the head here, you have the sign of Om. So that the very form of that God gives you the sign of the syllable Om, which is the sound of the energy of the universe, of which all things are precipitations.